One, two, three, four. I used to be firm and shiny and round until a new mode for me was found. They squished me and poured me into a pail and decided to call me a tomato cartel. Now people slurp me through a straw instead of nibbling at me like before. Mix me with vodka and call me Bloody Mary. Mix me with hot sauce and I get pretty scary. But I still use my maiden name, 'cause when it comes right down to it, I'm still the same. So if you want me for some salivating flavor, just ask the waiter for the little tomato.
The following is a rebroadcast of a show originally aired on WFMU and edited for rebroadcast on Waveform's WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio in New York's Upper Hudson Valley, streaming online at waveform.org/listen. Fermentation is itself a magical process that tests our patience and some might say our palate. This is a segue into WGXC's Radio Magic Pledge Drive. It is a 2-week pledge drive where we ask our listeners to help donate to our $15,000 goal. You can do a small donation, $15, every little bit counts. If everybody listening right now helped contribute $15, we would reach our goal in no time. Go to wgxc.org/donate or call in 518-697-7400. That is 518-697-7400. But if you hate talking on the phone, you can always go online, wgxc.org/donate.
Thank you. Generally speaking, fermentation is the transformative action of microorganisms. Broadly speaking, fermentation is the transformative action of microorganisms.
Thank you. the most current number for how long we've been doing this is fish found in Sweden, it is 7,000 BC, so 9,000 years old. So some of our earliest evidence, our second earliest evidence is similarly about 7,000 BC, is bigger, ancient Pre-Russian in China. So this is something how humans have manipulated foods in this way, 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 way back. Another thing that cooking with heat and cooking with microbes have in common is that they're really simple recipes. I mean, cooking pasta, and pasta, water, heat, and here is sauerkraut, red sauerkraut, salt, thyme, wait. But then you're done. Eventually you're done. So simple, really simple recipes. You know, often when we think of cooking, we think of these complex things. You add this, you do this. It's very complex. You have to have a lot of skill and training. Not necessarily that hard. The other thing that cooking with heat and cooking with microbes have in common is they break down large molecules. So the large molecules of food, the proteins, the carbohydrates, the fats, break those down when you molecules on top of a brown steak due to the breaking down of the proteins. And similarly, when you ferment milk, you're also breaking down the carbohydrates in the milk, adding lots of microbes. And over time, you're getting these beautiful flavors that come from that milk, that come from the long, big molecules. It's like breaking down of them that does this, creates this beautiful new flavor. So, very quickly. So, microbes are good at what they do, is they divide really fast. And I like this, usually doing this. So, you have one bacteria, it divides into two bacteria, then they die, the third one dies, and then each of these go to the next block, keep doing this. And over time, you get something like this. So, good, good, good. So, you can put all this together in an equation. Looks like this, and it basically says that if this much time elapsed, and if the time of a generation is this long, how many do you have tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.? This lecture.
So, okay.
Good. So you can put all this together in an equation. The equation looks like this. And it basically says that if this much time elapsed, and if the time of a generation is this long, so the time of a human generation is like 3 years, microbes, plants, and microbes, plug it in, find out how many there will be after a certain amount of time. So I thought we should do an experiment. Do a little calculation. Question number 7, the old poem. E. coli divided. exponentials are amazing. They on a micro. Is that true? Is that gonna happen? Yes or no? Why?
Broadly speaking, fermentation is the transformative action of microorganisms.
So it is a great honor for me, huge honor for me, to introduce Sander Katz. Sander Katz is one of the great fermentation experts of our time. And
it's the transaction it is. The transformative action of microorganisms. It is the transformative action of microorganisms. Broadly speaking, fermentation is the transformative action of microorganisms. Fermentation is the transformative action of microorganisms. In our pantries and, those sort of, old things that have started decomposing in the far reaches of the refrigerator, that's also the transformative action of microorganisms. But we don't call that fermentation. We call that spillage or rotting. And so we have a different vocabulary, and we reserve the word fermentation to describe desirable or intentional microbial transformations. The transformative action of microorganisms, but we don't call that fermentation. We call that spillage or rotting. And so we have a different vocabulary, and we reserve the word fermentation to describe desirable or intentional microbial transformations. Broadly speaking, fermentation is the transformative action of microorganisms. We clean our refrigerators and our pantries and our pantries and pantries and our pantries and our pantries. That have started decomposing in the far reaches of the refrigerator, that's also the transformative action of microorganisms, but we don't call that fermentation. We call that spoilage or rotting. And so we have a different vocabulary, and we reserve the word fermentation to describe desirable or intentional microbial transformations.
equations are useful. Sometimes. Okay, so that's it for Abrams. So last week, we cooked with heat. We did something, I mean, Lydia added all kinds of things to water, but basically what she did, from a scientist standpoint, was she added grains to water, and then she added heat. And then she waited. That was basically it. This week, we're going to cook with microbes. So you would think sort of at first glance that these are kind of opposite ways to cook. Most of you know that adding heat to food is what sanitizes food. It's what kills microbes. And when we cook with microbes, as Sandra will tell us, you really want to make sure that you keep those microbes not just surviving, but happy, thriving, dividing, doing. And when we cook with microbes, as Sandra will tell us, you really want to make sure that you keep those microbes not just surviving, but happy, thriving, dividing. Keep those microbes not just surviving, but happy, thriving, dividing, doing their thing so they add flavor, preserve the food, do their thing. Keep those microbes not just surviving, but happy, thriving, dividing, doing their thing so they add flavor, preserve the food, do their thing. So that's kind of our goal for today. And the reason for this is that microbes are basically bags of enzymes. Enzymes are basically proteins. Usually when we cook food, we mess with proteins, right? If you cook a steak, you're messing with the proteins. If you're whipping egg white, you're actually messing with the proteins. If you are cooking an egg, you're denaturing the proteins, you're messing with the proteins. Now, if you messed with the proteins inside these cute little yeast, you would be messing with all of these enzymes, and the yeast would die. So you don't want to do that. Okay, so they may seem opposite, but they have actually a lot in common. So one of the things that cooking with heat and cooking with microbes have in common is it's something humans have been doing for millennia. So this is, the most current number for how long we've been doing this is fish found in Sweden, actually, that is 7,000 BC, so 9,000 years old. That's some of our earliest evidence. Our second earliest evidence is similarly about 7,000 BC is beer, ancient beer recipes in China. So this is something how humans have manipulated foods in this way, 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 way back. The other thing that cooking with heat and cooking with microbes had in common is that they're really simple recipes. I mean, cooking pasta. You add pasta, water, heat, done. Here is sauerkraut. Add sauerkraut, salt, thyme, wait. Then you're done. Eventually you're done. So really simple recipes. You know, often when we think of cooking, we think of these complex things. You add this, you do this. It's very complex. You have to have a lot of skill and training. Not necessarily that hard. The other thing that cooking with heat and cooking with microbes have in common is they break down large molecules. So the large molecules are food, proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. Break those down when you cook, say, a steak. So delicious molecules on top of a brown steak. So microbes are good at what they do.
So that's one variable. Salt is another variable. Salt slows down the process a little bit. So if you use a lot of salt, that's going to slow down the process a little bit. If you use no salt or just a tiny bit of salt, the process will go faster. I've had some interesting experiences that sort of have reinforced for me how subjective the question of when kraut is ready. When Wild Fermentation came out, I went on this cross-country book tour, and I left in my pickup truck with about 40 gallons of kraut in buckets. And when I left, it was about 6 weeks old. By the time I got to Albuquerque, New Mexico, it was 2 months old. I'm doing my demo in the food co-op in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and this Austrian woman stopped to talk to me and taste my sauerkraut, and she tasted my two-month-old sauerkraut, and her evaluation was, that's very good for coleslaw. And it turned out that to her Austrian bread palate, my sauerkraut was not mature enough to legitimately be called sauerkraut. Then she explained to me that in Austria they like it when it starts to get soft, which is something that will eventually happen because of enzymes in the vegetables will start to break down the pectins, which are the compounds that make vegetables crunchy. Exactly at the point when I'm thinking about throwing it into compost, she's thinking that it's ready to eat. So, there's no accounting for taste or anything. Then the contrasting experience that I had was I ran out of sauerkraut towards the end of my tour. But I was always doing demos, so I started serving people with my nailed sauerkraut. The first time I did that, I felt embarrassed because it's not very sour after 3 days. But I got a lot of feedback from people saying, wow, that's the best sauerkraut I ever had in my life. I thought I didn't like sauerkraut, but that's delicious. And, my conclusion is that there's no virtue in, waiting for 6 weeks if you're going to like it better after 6 days. And it turns out that many people prefer a younger, milder sauerkraut. Now, some people don't even care what it tastes like, and they're just, they just want the probiotics, and they're totally utilitarian, and they just say, like, okay, at what point am I going to get the most bacteria? If you just look at cell counts, it pretty much follows a bell curve, but that doesn't tell the whole story. Numbers don't tell the whole story. I mentioned earlier that sauerkraut is a successional process, and you get different bacterial strains coming into dominance at different stages of its development. So, probably the best thing you can do if you're interested in cultivating biodiversity in your gut is to eat it at different stages of its development. Because, at each stage, you're going to get, something different. Composition of bacteria. But I would say the most important thing is to have something in your life. So, give it 3 or 4 days and taste it. Pack it back down, press it back in, and then test it again a second time. After a few more days, it's going to have a stronger, more acidic, tartar, sharper flavor. Pack it down, leave it for 3 more days. And continue to get more sour. If one day you taste it and you think, like, wow, this is getting strong, I don't know if I want it to get any stronger than this, well, that's the time to transfer it to your fermentation slowing device, which is your refrigerator. But you don't necessarily ever have to put it in your refrigerator, and certainly historically you don't ever put it in your refrigerator. But of course, if you live in an apartment, it's not like you can leave it for 8 months on your apartment counter, which is heated in the in the winter time. It's not that you couldn't. You could, but it would just end up being soft and mushy like baby food. It wouldn't make it toxic or dangerous to me. It would make it, you know, maybe aesthetically less pleasing to you. But what I just encourage people to do is taste it at intervals as it's developing. You know, find out, you know, where along that spectrum you like it best. Or maybe you'll be like me, someone who just can enjoy it at all of its different stages of development. You know, you don't have to wait till one batch is done to start a next batch. It's great to have like a few different batches, you know, with different combinations of vegetables. You know, this is something you can incorporate into almost any meal. I think of it as a condiment. You can use it as a side dish. You can use it in sandwiches or wraps. You can use it with eggs. You know, just a bunch of really versatile things. So those are the basics. I mean, this is not rocket science. People have been doing this, you know, in their very, very basic kitchens nobody could say exactly for how long because, you know, sauerkraut, like almost every fermentation process, is older than the sort of system. And, you know, nobody had paper or writing, you know, to, you know, sort of tell us the story when it first happened. You know, so the oldest surviving documents in different writing traditions make reference to ferments that were popular in those parts of the world. But sauerkraut is older than writing itself, as are, you know, most of the major fermented foods and beverages that people enjoy around the world.
It's a very special time here at WGXC. It is the Radio Magic Winter Pledge Drive. For 2 weeks out of the year, we ask you, our dear listeners, to pledge your support to Creative Community Radio. You can support WGXC by going to wgxc.org/donate or calling 518-697-7400. You're listening to Radio Ravioli. Today we are fermenting sounds coming from your radio live in the studio, transforming them into something else entirely. We were just listening to Pharoah Sanders, his album Tawheed, or Tawhid, as well as C.M. von Hauswolf's Still Life Requiem. Together, fermented into something pulsating, new vibrations. I don't know, you tell me what it was. And speaking of Sanders, we've also been playing throughout a lot of the show, actually, is inspired by a Sander Katz, his book Wild Fermentation, which is a really engaging and wonderfully easy book to read that makes you inspired about fermenting your own yogurt, beers, and meads, misos, and cheeses. It's really cool. I was reading through it the other day, and I really liked it. It's really good writing style as well. I think you should check it out. It's called Wild Fermentation. Here for another